This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is Tim Winter, Executive Director of the Parents Television Council. He describes the group's mission as protecting children from graphic and gratuitous sex, violence, and profanity in the media, primarily on TV. The council has organized letter-writing campaigns to the FCC. The publication Media Week reported, based on files released through the Freedom of Information Act, that nearly 100% of the complaints to the FCC in the year 2003 were from the council. The council takes credit for leading the charge against Janet Jackson's Super Bowl halftime appearance. The council currently has an email campaign against the hamburger chain Carl's Jr. in protest against its Paris Hilton ad. The Parents Television Council was founded by Brent Bozell, who also founded the Media Research Center, a watchdog group that monitors the press for a liberal bias. I asked Tim Winter what he considers to be the biggest offenders now on television.
Right now, it is primarily the basic cable, expanded basic cable networks we see as the most egregious in terms of pumping real graphic and gratuitous content in front of families, American families. And, you know, the broadcast airwaves are public property. The laws protect families and children during certain times of the day when children are most likely to be in the audience. And we think that those FCC rules, as mandated by Congress, are reasonable. It doesn't prohibit content from being broadcast. It just requires that the real most graphic content be aired after the time of day when most kids are asleep. Now, cable is different. Cable does not have the same indecency standard. But what these cable companies are forcing families to do is not only to subscribe to these graphic channels, but actually pay for these channels. If, for example, I have a young daughter, she loves the Disney Channel. In order to allow her to watch the Disney Channel, I am forced also to subscribe and pay for MTV, FX, and a number of other very graphic networks. This is what we see as extremely egregious. This is what we believe is probably the largest offender right now in terms of filth being poured into our living rooms. It is these basic cable networks that have this extortion-like business practice, forcing me and other millions of families, tens of millions of families around the country, to pay for their filth.
So if you were able to subscribe to cable a la carte and just pay for the basic cable stations you wanted and not pay for the stations that you didn't want in your home, would that satisfy your group?
That certainly satisfies the cable aspect of what we're trying to do. By not underwriting the filth, we think that two things are met. Families are free, able to turn on their televisions without fear of being offended and bombarded. And secondly, it protects the rights of those who choose to watch that kind of material, that they certainly have their constitutional right to do so. And a la carte really, I think, satisfies both sides of the equation there.
Frank Rich mentioned that he understands that some of the Christian networks are opposed to the a la carte ordering of basic cable because they're afraid that they wouldn't get into as many homes, that a lot of people wouldn't pay for them. Have you been finding that to be true?
Well, we find that every cable network is afraid of that. Every cable network is granted this special business process which no other industry provides, which is forcing customers to subscribe and pay for content they don't want, whether it's a religious broadcaster or MTV or FX or any of these other networks. All cable networks are benefited by this.
Now, Congress is considering several things right now. One is that the FCC would have the right to regulate cable as well as broadcasting. It was always understood that the FCC regulated the airwaves because there were a limited number of stations that could exist on the airwaves, and the airwaves belonged to the public. Therefore, they were regulated by the government. And cable was considered to come outside of the jurisdiction of the FCC because, first of all, it wasn't limited to just like a few stations like broadcast had been, and it wasn't using the public airwaves. Would you like to see cable regulated by the FCC in the same way that broadcast TV is?
No, actually, we would prefer for, again, the a la carte solution really solves the issue pretty comprehensively. But what we would say is this: if the cable industry refuses to let the market really decide here, if the cable industry refuses, as they have continued to refuse, to allow this a la carte, this cable choice alternative for families, for its subscribers, then I think they should have the same level playing field as the broadcasters. I think that why should, on your remote control, Channel 5 have a certain set of legal guidelines and Channel 6 has a different set of legal guidelines? For a child with a remote control in his or her hand, it makes no difference to that child. And again, there's a perfect solution. If the cable industry is, in order to protect its billions of dollars of revenue, refuses to allow this simple, commonsensical solution, then I think they should be brought, at least the basic and expanded basic cable networks should be brought within the same decency standards as broadcast. No, we're not talking about the HBOs of the world. Those are, you know, premium subscription channels. What we're talking about here is the these basic tiers that have Animal Planet and these news networks. Again, we're talking about the basic networks, not the expanded premium.
But what about filters? Filtering technology allows parents to screen out stations that they don't want their children to see. So if filters work, why would you need the FCC to intervene?
Well, the commercially available filters, you can either block a channel outright, or you can set up your V-chip, which is in every single TV set that's been manufactured after such and such a date, I think the late 90s, to catch and to prohibit any kind of content, any television program coming through. Now, the V-chip is based upon a TV rating system. The TV rating system, much like the motion picture system, you have different, you know, TV MA, TV 14, TV G. I don't even, you know, here I've been in the broadcast industry for almost 25 years, and I still don't understand really what those monikers mean. But it's supposed to take a clue from what has been mostly successful with motion pictures. Now, Who rates a television show to determine whether it's a mature show or whether it's a kid show or what? Guess who? It's the television networks. If a television network rates a program too highly, too maturely, the advertisers will stay away. And who gets hurt? Gee, the networks. So you have basically the fox guarding the hen house here in terms of trying to set up a standard, a system that protects kids. If the rating system were accurate, the V-chip is something that might be able to be relied upon. But right now it's not.
Your group, the Parents Television Council, has been credited with generating, I think, about 99% of the letters that the FCC gets with complaints about indecent material on broadcast. Would you describe your approach to letter writing campaigns? And I should say that you had letter writing campaigns for against the Janet Jackson Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction, letter writing campaign about the Nicolette Sheridan promotional spot before Monday Night Football. You now have a letter writing campaign against Carl's Jr. and Hardee's because of the Paris Hilton ad. So why don't you describe your approach to letter writing campaigns?
Sure. First, let me correct an error in the premise there. We do not, we are not responsible for 99% of the complaints to the FCC. That number was manufactured by the FCC because we publicly embarrassed them for not doing their job. The FCC, frankly, does not like us that much because we do publicly embarrass them when they fail to do their abide by their charter, which is to serve the public interest and to enforce the indecency laws. The former chairman, Michael Powell, couldn't stand us. And frankly, he sicked one of his henchmen on us publicly by saying, oh, the PTC is responsible for 99%. That's factually false. Last year, the PTC and its members filed approximately 225,000 complaints out of a total of between 1.1 and 1.2 million. That's about 20%. I will absolutely take credit for, on behalf of my organization, creating a means for the public to speak out to the FCC. Up until we made this online web complaint form possible through our website, there was no effective way for the public to speak out to the governing body, their public servants, the FCC, to be able to speak out to the FCC. We're proud of the fact that we put in place a reasonable and easy means by which the public can complain if they feel the law has been broken. Now, Do we do letter writing campaigns? Absolutely. Email campaigns? Absolutely. We did not do one on the Nicolette Sheridan or the Desperate Housewives episode that you mentioned. We did on Janet Jackson. We did recently with a broadcast where a prostitute was hired to have sex with a horse to extract horse semen. We felt that that was a violation of the indecency law. We did not file an FCC complaint with this Paris Hilton Carl Jr.
No,
Hardee's.
I should clarify, your complaint is to Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Your complaint is to the corporation.
Correct. Our complaint is to the corporation that there's gross corporate irresponsibility when you're trying to sell hamburgers and maximize profit by basically using pornography during early times of the day to make your product known. We think it is absolutely grossly irresponsible from a corporate standpoint, and we have had tens of thousands of our members write to the CEO via email. And the CEO has, number one, dismissed us our complaints and said, get a life. He doesn't want to hear from us anymore, so he's effectively blocked any communication from our members to executives there to speak out. I think that's ironic.
Do you think that an organized email campaign, such as the campaigns run by the Parents Television Council, should have the same weight, whether the letters are received by the FCC or by an individual broadcast network or by a commercial sponsor, should they have the same weight as letters that seem to come from people who actually saw the program or saw the commercial and decided to sit down and in their own words say something?
I think it should absolutely carry the same amount of weight. The reason why we have a million members across the country is because people are so fed up and they feel that one voice can't accomplish anything. This is just trying to take a pot shot at an organization, and other folks do it too. They say, well, even Chairman Michael Powell himself referred to PTC member email as spam. Here's a public servant serving the public, and the public speaks out, and he calls it spam because they happen to be members of an organization. I think that's outrageous. I think he should have been fired a long time ago rather than having the opportunity to quit.
Let me give you an example of something that's happened with our show. We've been the subject of a couple of email campaigns, and we've gotten a lot of emails saying, we saw your program, blah, 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 blah. And it's clear that some of the people writing have no idea we're even a radio show, that we're not a television show. And so when you get emails like that, you know, that are responding to a campaign, and you could tell the people don't know your show, they think it's a TV show, it's hard to take those letters seriously.
I'm not sure how to respond to that one.
They want to be part of the cause. They want to do what they think is the right thing and do what their organization tells them to do. But, you know, sometimes they don't even know what the target is of their complaint.
If your organization is receiving letters, complaints, which clearly they contradict the facts, I think you have to consider that letter in its context. At the same time, if you get the same letter from someone who did hear a program that they felt required a letter, a response, I think you have every obligation to, as responding to a consumer, as a customer, to respond to that inquiry. Now, is it tough? Yes. But just because it's difficult doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
When you're monitoring content for children, you know, so that parents know what's out there, do you consider whether characters are gay or not? Is homosexuality an issue one way or another for you?
No. It is for many of our members, not all of them, some of them. And when there are gay situations, again, we'll include that in the description so that those who feel strongly about that can, again, make a more informed choice for themselves. Our organization does not have a position on that issue. We treat graphic sex, whether it be gay, straight, whatever, as the same. It's graphic sex. And that is what we're trying to protect children from, is the exposure to this graphic sex. And again, the reasons for, the rationale for doing so, is so well documented by other very well-known, respected research organizations around the country, which shows that an early age exposure and repeated exposure to graphic sexual material does encourage sexual activity at an earlier age.
You publish what you call a family TV guide, in which you give descriptions of certain shows. For The Simpsons, The description is not recommended for younger viewers. The show ridicules entrepreneurs, religion, educators, and law enforcement officials and has occasionally incorporated foul language into its dialogue. The cartoon sends a mixed message on parenthood. While the father is a bumbling idiot, the mother is a loving and patient wife and role model. Why is it important to point out that the show ridicules entrepreneurs, religion, educators, and law enforcement officials?
Well, again, all these the ridicule, the messages in the media, are often subtle, and we can certainly sit back and laugh and make fun of many things. I like The Simpsons personally; it's one of my favorite shows. I laugh out loud. I think it is just a creative powerhouse. The characters, I get a big charge out of it. But guess what? I don't want it when I don't have it on in the living room when my daughter's in the room, because there is harsh language, there is coarse dialogue, there are representations of characters which, you know what, at such a young age could create a lasting impression, which I want my child to develop outside of that kind of a negative portrayal. And so what I do is the best I possibly can, like I hope most other parents try to do. If they're going to watch something that that they enjoy, that they don't feel is appropriate for their kids, they make sure that they watch it at a time, in a place, in a way that that their kids are not exposed to.
So your group isn't only about decency and profanity and violence, because you're also objecting to, you know, ridiculing shows that ridicule entrepreneurs, religion, and educators.
And racism and sexism. I mean, you know, we do studies frequently that talk about, we do them not infrequently. We do research reports, we publish studies on all manner of other content. For instance, we have done, not every Father's Day, but about every other Father's Day, a report on how are father figures portrayed on broadcast television. Isn't it interesting that in most sitcoms, the biggest idiot in the whole plot is usually the father in the house? It takes the kid, the smart aleck kid next door, to solve the problems that a father can't do inside their own home. Again, you know, repeated exposure to this type of material, does it make a kid all of a sudden love their father less? Of course not. But I tell you what, the repeated messages, these undertones, are subtle, and they can have a lasting impact. And that's why it's so important for us to point these out, and for parents to make more informed choices so that they can make sure that their kids are seeing more along the lines of what they want their family to see.
Many conservatives are against regulation, and they think that markets should decide what survives and what fails and what flourishes and what doesn't. Why do you think that entertainment should be different, that there should be more rather than less regulation of entertainment programming?
Well, first of all, I'm not a conservative. I'm proudly liberal, been a lifelong Democrat, and happy to talk about any manner of social issues, left, center, right, that will affirm that position. The fact that there are let's call them libertarians, people who feel there should be no place whatsoever for the government when it comes to media consumption, media content. I certainly respect that opinion. Markets should decide on almost every front. But when people are exploiting and actually doing civic harm for the sake of a buck, we don't stand for it as a society. When people are employing 10 and 12-year-olds in Malaysia to build tennis shoes so that we can buy them more cheaply at Walmart, we're outraged. We stand up and we say, no, we won't allow that. As a society, it's wrong. When tobacco products have a warning on the box that say that may cause cancer, do we say, well, but you know, we're just going to let the market decide? Or are we going to say, you know what, the states are going to ban the sale of tobacco products to kids under 18 or 17, whatever the age is for the various states? Do we just sit back and say, well, we're going to let the market decide on everything? Not when there is a long-term documented cause and effect harm that can be clinically, socially, medically measured and associated with any other type of activity or product. We don't stand up for it.
You have children?
I have a 7.5-year-old daughter, yes.
What's the most difficult part for you of feeling confident that she's not watching stuff that you think will really be harmful, that it'll be obscene or indecent or sexual?
The hardest part is that because the broadcast airwaves have become so coarse recently, there's just no certainty at any time of the day that when you turn on the TV and start flipping channels that you're not going to be barraged by something. A couple of years ago, I mentioned when I was a stay-at-home dad for a while, and I was cooking dinner. I was literally cooking dinner in the kitchen, and I heard the channels being flipped. And she stopped on this one television show, and I came out to see what it was. And it was one of these reality dating shows. So it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I got her, you know, to turn the channel quickly away. I went in the other room to watch and see exactly what it was that was on, because I was shocked by what I saw just briefly. It was a show where there's two guys and two girls, and they basically are competing to see who's going to shack up and sleep with whom. And in order to make the show more edgy, they throw in, at the end of the show, one more guy or one more girl, so it's uneven. There's three of one and two of the other. In order for this one girl to get the guy she wanted, she took off her shirt, she put whipped cream on her breasts, and she allowed the guy to eat the whipped cream off her bare chest. Now, it was pixelated, but you could still see basically everything that was happening. The message that's being broadcast at 5 in the afternoon is that, little girls, if you want the boy to like you, this is the type of behavior you need to take. This is what you need to do if you want the boy to like you and to pick you. It's subtle, and it's not spoken, but it's powerful. If that show is on at midnight or 11 o'clock at night and I'm a college kid, I'm saying, hey, this is the best show in the world. Come on, guys, watch this. This is great. But at that time of the day, again, I was in the kitchen making dinner, and all of a sudden I heard this dialogue, and I'm thinking, what the heck is that? When I popped out, I was absolutely blown away by what I saw. This is the type of stuff that is most frightening as the parent of a young girl. I think Howard Stern is very funny. I think he's smart. He knows his audience, and he delivers to his audience a product that his audience likes. But when he's talking endlessly about a girl and anal sex, if he's putting into the minds of young boys, young men, that if a girl doesn't put out anal sex on the first date, she's not cool. There is an added pressure on every young girl in this country. This is a societal issue, and this is a health and welfare issue. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm fighting this battle, because I believe that there is a cause and effect, and I'm trying to do everything I possibly can to preserve the next generation of kids from having a further downward spiral from more gross graphic content at even earlier times of the day.
Your group was very concerned about the Janet Jackson breast exposure on the Super Bowl. And so it started this like huge controversy in the country, right? Everybody's talking about it. The news is talking about it. The talk shows are buzzing about it. And every time you turned on the TV, you basically saw that moment over and over and over again, pixelated, but you saw it like over and over and over for months. What was your reaction to watching the Janet Jackson moment over and over and over again, even though it was, you know, pixelated? You were constantly having your attention called to it.
Well, again, it's a slippery slope. We're seeing it again now with this Paris Hilton TV commercial. It's on every single network news program around the country. We're giving the folks at Carl's Jr. even more attention to this commercial than we thought. But what's our alternative? Our alternative is to shut up and allow it to just happen, and for it to become the next standard by which next year's has to be more edgy than that. Again, at some point in time, you have to call this out. And you have to say, thus far and no farther. That's what we're saying. And if part of the controversy is the amount of additional media exposure, and that's the price we have to pay for this stuff for this downward spiral to cease, you know what? It's painful, but that's what we have to do. With the Janet Jackson thing, again, people can debate till the cows come home about what the harm is of a breast being exposed. But the bottom line is, families were sitting down to watch a football game. And without their consent, they were forced to watch briefly a striptease. No one had the ability. The V-chip wouldn't have protected that. There's no remote control in history fast enough to unring that bell once it already happened. That's the offense. And the fact that it did have such huge outrage across the country, I think, is reflective of the amount of media coverage that came after it. And if that's the price, it's a painful price. But if that's the price to make sure it never happens again, then you know, I guess we have to just sit back and say that's the cost of our doing business. The additional exposure, the additional amount of times that graphic content was aired, if that's what it takes to reverse the tide, so be it.
Tim Winter, good to talk with you. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Tim Winter is the executive director of the Parents Television Council.